Good morning. I'll say again, this meeting of the Finance Committee has been posted as a public meeting because we have many outside individuals invited. There are more than three board members that are going to be participating. So I asked Mike to schedule it as a public meeting, so therefore it is being recorded. First of all, I'd like to say this is John Scully. I'll chair the meeting today. Those of us in Helena, I'd ask for a roll call around the table, identify yourself, and then I'll do the same by phone.
This is Brian Simonson, Deputy Executive Officer, CFO for Department of Livestock.
Evan Waters, Finance and Accounting Bureau Chief here in Helena, Department of Livestock.
Mike Honeycutt, Executive Officer, DOL.
John Youngberg, Montana Farm Bureau.
Liz Stavick, Montana Farm Bureau.
On the phone, would you please identify yourselves, please?
Lila Taylor, board member.
Ed Wellner,
veterinary nurse.
Hold on, Ed Wellner, board member.
Ed Wellner, board member.
Sue Brown, board member.
Lila Taylor, board member.
Charlotte Lauerman, Montana Co Association.
Keep going. Yes, please.
Again, Stuart Doggett.
Hi, Stuart. Others?
Brown, Montana, Wilbur.
Got Wilgars.
Yes.
I know Jay Bodner's on. Is there anybody else on?
Serena Bradley, Mariah's River Livestock Association.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Add another. Who's that?
I didn't hear.
Whoever just last spoke, would you repeat it, please? Okay, and we have another guest who just came in the room.
Peggy Nutter, Mariah's River Livestock Association.
Okay, is there anybody we don't have recorded? All right, I'm going to go to the bottom of the agenda and ask if there are any public comments on non-agenda items. If so, we're going to cover that now. Any public comment on non-agenda items? Okay, let's start with the agenda. I'm hopeful that all of you have it. If you do not, let me just recite it for you. Legislative request first, FY18 year-end data, current budget status, livestock building status, legislative issues discussion, public comment on non-agenda items we already took, and so our target is to adjourn by 12:30. Let's start on the legislative request. I've asked that we start with House Bill 2, which is our ongoing biennial request made on each session. And would ask Mike and Brian and Evan to enlighten us.
Brian, so walk through it, fill in blanks if I need to.
Very good. So in the packet of stuff that you could have or might have got open in front of you, here at the table we're holding a spreadsheet or a table that starts with the words HB2, Department of Livestock, in the upper left corner. That's the table that I'm going to address first. So if you can pull that out.
Can you push the mic up to closer to him?
I'll move closer, guys. Okay. So let me orient you to this table a little bit. For those who aren't aware, I've been on the job here as the Chief Financial Officer for a few months now. So there's a learning curve associated with what I think you know and what you think I know. So we'll drive through this together. So on the table, the very first section there, which the header is Department of Livestock, that's a summary of everything that's below. And after that, I'll break it out into, as you can see there, centralized services, and then flipping the page, you'll see brands and meat inspection, milk and eggs, and then animal health categories. So I'll probably stay mostly just on the top table there because that covers the entire department. Okay, going across the top there, the 2019 base funding, that is the basis for both the 2020 section or year and the 2021 year. And then the adjustments are what you would have is statewide present law adjustments or other present law adjustments that the department needed to make, or new proposals would be included in those adjustment figures, and then you would have the total appropriation for 2020 and 2021, you know, to the right of that, of those, respectively. The expenses there, the $61,000, so personnel, operating, equipment, grant, benefit, transfer, those are all the accounting level one allocations that our authority is pushed into or that we request from, excuse me. So those will total down to the total expenditures, and then below that you'll have the funding to meet those expenditures, and all of those general fund, state special revenue, federal, proprietary, those will total up to that total expenditure line in every instance on this table. Was there a question?
Keep going.
Okay. All right. So I have a sheet of talking notes here that I'm going to drive off of for the most part, and then I'll try to keep us on track with the table as far as where I'm at. So as you can see on the 2020 adjustments at the bottom of for total expenditures, which will also relate to total authority requests, we're looking nearly at a it says $1,993,032, so that we're looking at nearly a $2 million increase from the 2019 base funding for 2020. So that's the overarching math. Okay. You might put your phone on mute if you don't have a comment for the group. That might help with some breakups that we've got going on. Of that $2 million, I just want to highlight where, you know, big chunks of that are falling out. So you can see there that there's $549,000-something dollars for general fund. $300,000 of that is a request for DSA expansion. That was the only general fund increase that OBPP was going to authorize for the Department of Livestock. On top of that were $200,000 in fixed cost increases or state present law adjustments that across the department. I'm sorry. Let me say again. On just the general fund, the remainder of that is mostly there's some meat general fund matching funds for federal dollars for employees increases that we had there, and there's also I think that's the majority of it besides just straight present law adjustments on personnel salaries like in the lab.
General fund?
General fund, yes.
So what? So
go ahead.
John, go ahead.
So the 549, that's what equals up to that 549, correct?
Right.
I guess.
Yeah.
So you've got meats. You have meats, lab, milk lab. Is there any milk increase or does it stay static?
Maybe a little bit on salary, but that's about it.
Okay. But for the record, here we still have general fund request in for the milk lab, which needs to be supported, or the consequences are felt by the industry, right?
Yeah, and just reiterating what Brian said, the 549,756 number he's referring to, trying to stay same with language we've used in board meetings in the past, that would be what you normally hear us refer to as the incremental to what we had in the base budget in the past. And just recapping that, since we got a lot of people on the phone, so what is driving those general fund increases? Big majority of it is the DSA expansion with taking more cattle under surveillance in Beaverhead County. I'll also point out for stakeholders that are here that that number doesn't just contemplate the expansion in Beaverhead County, but any likely expansion that we might have during the biennium. So we're trying to forward planning there. So if we have another incident like we had this biennium where elk show up somewhere where we had not previously had that in our plan and we needed to expand surveillance, that we would have authority, budget authority to do so. So that's the big majority. And then on the meat and lab general fund increases, just to reiterate what Brian said, so we had the snapshot of salaries. There were salary increases there. Some of you have heard in past board meetings that our meat inspectors became part of a labor union during this last biennium, which necessitated some negotiation on salary and other things. The snapshot picked that up. So we need those general fund increases to also get the federal match to be able to handle those items in our base budget in continuing services. So that's what's driving that increase in the general fund line.
Okay, so for the, I'll just ask you, for the board meeting, would you take that general fund 549 in each of 20 and 21 and break it out in percentages of how much of it is for what?
Yes.
For the board meeting?
Absolutely.
You have to do it right now, but just do that for the board meeting. Okay. John Youngberg.
Does the increase in the DSA funding also include those counties that are required to test outside?
No, it does not. There's not a reimbursement on the vaccination requirement. wasn't previously. So we've not put funds in for reimbursement for additional vaccination, only cattle that are under DSA surveillance directly.
Any other questions on the general fund amount? Okay, other special revenue funds.
So the state special revenue is made up of predominantly per capita fee and then brand inspections. There's also some milk fees in there and sundry other smaller funds. But for the most part, what you're looking at when you look at that $1.3 million increase in 2020 adjustments, that is almost entirely per capita fee increases. The major chunk of that will be personnel expenses, but before I get to that, I just wanted to highlight that we did put in a bunch of new proposals for things such as $200,000 in kind of lab equipment upgrades. We had $75,000 in predator funding. We had $50,000 in vehicle replacements for aging vehicles. And then there's also a 50,000 marker in there for public information. All of those can be seen on the governor's webpage, which I was going to say earlier and missed on the budget for OBPP. In the section C is where you'll find those new proposals. So if you haven't looked at those yet, I really suggest that's a good information spot to go
to. And if for whatever reason you can't get access to the process, call here. And we can make a copy of what those are consisted of, because it goes back to the meeting that the board had that approved those additional budget items back in August, July.
And each one of those new proposals, there's a lot of old hands at the process here, but for anybody who is unfamiliar with the legislative process, all those new proposals will be taken up as decision packages during our appropriation subcommittee hearings that'll be scheduled some point in January or early February when that committee determines its schedule.
Questions by anyone?
Mr. Chairman, this is Lila. Can you tell me where we went from 35.11 and this 35.62 FTEs to 37, 38, 39 in 2021? Who specifically they are or where?
Let me hold on to that one question a minute,
okay.
Lila. And let's get to that after we get rid of.
That's fine. Yeah, I just wanted in there.
Other on revenue and expenses. Let me make an observation. Operating expenses in 2020, it goes up $1.4 million. 2021, it goes up an additional $1.4 million.
It doesn't go up an additional million.
Okay. Then explain that, please.
Yeah. So that's what, well, in the 2019 base funding, that would be in both categories. So you go right back to the base funding for 2019. So actually, we're going down relative to 2020. In 2021, you know, we go from, in 2020, the adjustment is 1.4, and in 2021, you can see it's 1.3 or almost 1.4. So it's relatively the same.
Okay, does everybody have that? So when you first look at it, it looks like it goes up $1.4 million each year. But you got to look at the 2020 total and the 2021 total to clarify that, okay? Other questions on operations or revenue? FTE question of Lila's.
So the brands put in a for temporary worker one-time only funding for 0.75 FTE. So that's where you go from the base funding of 137.63 full-time equivalents, and then you add that 0.75 that they want to catch up on a bunch of things that they've fallen behind on for brand recording and in preparation for, I'd say,
well,
getting ready
for brand re-record.
Re-record, right, exactly. And then they asked for an additional 0.75 on top of that for 2021. So that added up to 1.5 for that year. But those are one time only and not, and when they get caught up, those will go away.
And to Lila's question about the move from 135 to 137, Lila, that is the two meat inspector FTEs that were placed into our budget by the Appropriations Committee during the 2017 session. But if you remember, we never hired those because they placed the FTEs in but did not place the budget authority in. So we were not able to hire them.
And remember the
budget.
Go ahead.
That's all right. I just thought we lost that we gave up those two employees when we did the governor's cuts in the special session.
We gave up hiring them, but the FTE stayed attached to the organization.
And we loaded those into snapshots, so they are. That's where you see that $109,000 in federal, the most
right.
of that, and then the general fund. There's a matching for that. So that's
okay.
Mostly those two personnel.
Okay. So we really didn't give up anything.
In terms of funding those positions, it's half general fund, give or take, and half federal money.
Right.
Question.
Okay, thank you.
Nina?
Are we saying that meets positions?
No. In fact, we're saying is we will, now that they've been captured in snapshot and the FTEs are still there, our intent would be, if they're funded through the appropriations process, that we would hire them because we definitely need more meat inspectors on the ground.
So, in other words, these other 2.01 FTEs that you're looking at are ones that you are going to have to request from legislature.
Yes.
We don't have them.
Yes, they're the FTEs and the authority are in the decision package.
So we don't know yet that legislature will give them to us.
We don't. Those will be things, and I think that's a great point because those, the ones for brands, are directly tied to, getting caught up on, the administrative paperwork, something we've talked about in the board many times, and doing the prep work ahead of re-record so that we're prepared to handle that. And I would say I wasn't here, but based on conversation I've been privy to, handle that better than we did 10 years ago the last time we had to work through it. And as Brian, and that's the other thing just for, I know there's a lot of folks who understand this language innate, but some folks on the call may not. So when you hear us refer to something as one time only, that means that's not carrying forward. So one time only means if we get that request, the next biennium it goes away because it was one time only within this biennium.
So the 137 or the 135 that we have now does not include the two for meat. And if it does not include the two for meat, does
Our current FTE count, our current head count, if we're completely full staff, based on what we have budget for, is 135. But
well, I don't care what we have budget for. What I care about is what we have.
But we have 137, you know, with this piece of with our short-term stuff here. So 137.63 is what we have on the book in this current biennium, in this current year.
We are authorized 137 FTEs that are funded for 135.
Right.
Okay? So we still need those two FTEs, so we need to get the funding for them. So that pumps it up to 137.
That would already be in your budget.
Right.
It's already FTEs.
The FTEs are already there. It's just no money.
Right.
Yep. Right there.
That's what we're talking about. Those two positions.
But I understand from this that you're in other grants, et cetera.
Well, they're 1.75 in 2020 and 1.5 total in 2021. It's not cumulative. Remember, going back to what I pointed out earlier, used as an example of the operating expenses. You go off for the 219 base. So in 2020, you increase at 0.75, and in 2021, you increase the 219 base 1.5. Those are brands. And do not include the two that are in meat. Okay. We're already there. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, keep rolling.
Okay, I'm trying to take my cues here. So I really, at this point, would just point out some highlights of Central Services, brands, and the lab. In Central Services, which is that next...
Let me interrupt you.
I'm sorry.
Go back to operating expenses and identify for the folks here the big piece parts of the $1.4 million increase of operating expenses.
Okay.
Because that's arguably half your budget, right?
Yeah. All right, there's a little bit of a, you got to hang with me a little bit here, but $720,000 of that is a budget correction. Because in 2019 biennium, we budgeted in the DSA and the Bison program incorrectly or erroneously. It got budgeted into personnel versus operations. So when we transfer from 2019 to 2020, we're taking a hit in our personnel funding and transferring it to operating $720,000. $600,000 of that in DSA and the remainder is 120 in Bison Federal. So, and that is all basically testing, lab testing.
Okay, so let's stop a second. So the issue started at the end of the legislative session where when the budget came out, it was backwards in two areas. So now we had to, not only did we have to live with that, we now have to correct it. So half of that 1.4 each year is that correction. Okay?
Yeah, and to go with Brian there, I think one of the things that, just because I know we have a lot of stakeholders on the call, so, you know, while that's a correction, still when it spits out of the process, it does make it look like we have a much greater operating increase than is reality. And so that is something when you're talking to legislators and when you're working through the process, that will be something that I assume will crop its head at times where we'll have to explain to people that it's not a true, you know, for rough numbers, $1.5 million operating expense increase. That half of that increase is a budget correction, and otherwise we'd see it up in personal services, right? Because we have to offset by that much. both directions. So, our personal services expenditures would be inflated if we didn't make that correction.
John Youngberg.
Mr. Chairman, Mike, so then how is that $720,000 reflected in personal services? Is it not included in, I mean, you've taken what you're transferring, $720,000 out of personnel services and moving it into operations. Where's it reflected in the personnel service?
Yeah, so there is a course. So when I say, when you look at the revenue increases of nearly $2 million, and I say that, $600,000 of that is in operations, there's $1 million of that in personnel increases over from the 2019 base to the 2020.
And to go there, that's why the number looks smaller than you would expect it to be. Because one of the things we're going to pick up from 2019 to 2020, and most of you are very well aware of that situation, that there was the issue with missing snapshot with salary increases back 2 years ago, that the board had been given a footnote from the Appropriations Committee. They exercised that footnote. They moved forward with what the intent of the legislative committee was. That happened after snapshot. There was no way, or it just didn't get put in. So that increase, so when you net that out, and I think that's what you're doing in your head, and you go, well, that sounds like a big personal services increase. The snapshot has now captured that salary increase. And so that's why there's such a difference between our base funding for 2019 salary and what has now been put into our ongoing budget for the biennium for 2020 and 2021. Because those salary increases were snapshotted this past July, and our base was readjusted.
So that number is about $400,000, give or take. And that will be the number requested for this year of our current biennium from House Bill 3 to try to keep us up to that. But it's already included in. So if you take that number plus the 700, yeah, then you're up to about 1.1.
And also remember that already in this budget, and the legislature and the executive branch will get to duke it out over that, but the governor's budget already has in place an idea of a salary increase broadband across all state employees. And so that's already been placed in the House motion as well.
Okay.
Any questions?
It's already in. Where is the governor's increase? It's already in personal services.
Yes,
and there are some inflationary fixed cost increases in operations, but the grunt of it will be in personnel. If I understand
the
question correctly.
Yes, thanks, Brian.
Other questions? Because this part can be confusing when you look at the totals.
And the big pieces, and I'll run down with the rest of those, the rest of those. As Brian mentioned, there were lab one-time only equipment upgrades that were placed in that were new proposals that are making up part of that operating expense increase. There is additional DSA operating expense increase associated with the expansion and preparation for future expansions. There's the $75,000 of additional funding for predator control activity that was approved by the board. And I would say that's the majority of the big rocks. And, well, the IT piece got shifted over, and we'll deal with it in a minute with House Bill 10. But those are the big rocks, unless I'm missing one, that make up what is outside of the correction that Brian mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd add to that is kind of into Lila's camp there question. There was about $200,000 in fixed cost increases.
Okay, and those are things that are executed by OBPP upon our budget, not by us. They're placed in there
right at
the governor's level.
Other questions? Okay, let's go to House Bill 3.
So on the very back, or page 4 of that table, I have three little bullets there at the bottom that say House Bill 3, House Bill 5, and House Bill 10. House Bill 3, the first one you can find in Section R of the governor's budget, which is basically a catch-all section, but it does have some pay. It talks about, you know, House Bill 13 is in there and House Bill 3 is in there. For there's probably a half a dozen House Bill 3 submissions from agencies, so we're one of them, and our request, which you can see there, was a total of $390,946 of state special revenue. Just an FYI, we
could
go ahead.
Let's explain House Bill 3, what it's there for.
Okay. House Bill 3 is a supplemental to make up for unforeseen activities that may happen, like a extensive wildfire season, things of that nature. In our case, the issue with the personal services and the snapshot 2 years ago, for agencies to request supplemental funding that's not for the next biennium, but it's for the current fiscal year. So for that would be fiscal year 19, which ends on July 30. So we're asking the legislature to approve additional authority to go into this year's budget to help offset those unforeseen circumstances that occur. And as Brian said, there's about a half dozen public defenders. Some others have things in there. In our case, the unforeseen circumstance is the issues with salaries. We managed our way through it in the first fiscal year of the biennium, balanced our budget, used vacancy savings, managed ourselves as closely as we could. There's not as many options for us in fiscal year 19 as there was in fiscal year 18, and we can get part of the way, but we can't get all the way. So that's why we've asked for a supplemental. And in our case, we're asking for supplemental authority against cash that we already have on hand. So we're not asking the legislature for authority and cash, which sometimes happens, but we're asking for straight authority to be able to make sure we can close our books properly for fiscal year 19.
Okay, and the second item is $7,300.
Yeah, that's just a milk control through their board approved increasing their authority for legal expenses that they anticipate having but don't have the authority or in place that they didn't budget for in the previous biennium.
And I would just point out that, like us, the Board of Milk Control is asking for that against cash on hand. They're asking for authority. They have cash on hand to take care of that.
It doesn't say that. Just FYI. Right. So we might want to correct that, right?
Well, I have it stated there is that these are both state special revenue authority increases, and we're not asking for money.
Right, 392, and remember, it always gets confusing when we talk about the attached agencies.
So you combined them, sorry.
Yeah, still, you know, their request is a department request because they're attached.
Just for whatever drill, though, I'd separate them.
Yeah.
Because we've gone through this before. I'd rather than say 390, do 383, and do 7,300.
Okay, split them, yeah.
Because they come back and tell you that you don't have any control over their budget. Okay, any questions on House Bill 3? House Bill 5?
Long-range building House Bill. We do have a marker in there after some consultation with the lab study subcommittee recommendation and A&E guidance. We put a request in originally in a House Bill 3 request for $100,000 to continue with lab design, architectural designs. Through the governor's office, they came to the conclusion to move that into House Bill 5, which is in Section F of the governor's budget. Actually, both House Bill 5 and the House Bill 10 are in that section.
So, questions about that? Let me raise an issue. I have an issue with it because I think that the Board of Livestock should be in a position to need to expend part of that money in the current year of the biennium. and we don't have any money for the veterinary diagnostic lab proposal. So I would hope that maybe we could get some legislative assistance to put that into House Bill 5 if we need it, or I mean House Bill 3 if we need it.
And I would say if that assistance were to come, that maybe splitting the figures, because with House Bill 3, you cannot carry forward any of those funds. So if all the $100,000 was in House Bill 3, on June 30, anything that was unspent, that authority would go away. So the House Bill 5 is important, because then that carries forward or is in the biennium, and there's ability to carry forward authority if for some reason we get delayed on a project or expenses come late. And so if there's a move of that nature, it's maybe a bifurcation, for the lack of a better term, to have something both directions.
The only problem that you have is if you're going to act, you're probably going to need a bigger number than $50,000 to get the job done within the calendar year. And then you'll be using some other money.
This is Jay. So that $100,000 is authority and cash. Is that correct for House Bill 5 for that lab planning?
Yeah, it's
special revenue.
Yeah.
Our cash, special revenue. So it's still our cash.
Repeat what you just said, John.
The issue would be how far the board wants to go in order to try to promote that building. And how quickly, and how much money it's going to take you to get a package to hand to anybody for financing authority. And if the board's going to do something, they ought to do it this coming year and not 2 years from now. And I think it'll cost you more than $100,000, actually. But we'll see what happens in the process. Any other questions?
So, yeah, I want to clarify, John Scully, I want a clarification to Jay's question. What did Jay, I guess I kind of didn't hear it quite right. Is he asked, what did Jay just ask and what did you answer? So I got it straight.
So my question, this is Jay again, I asked, is that $100,000, is that, I guess I just wanted a clarification whether that was, you know, special revenue or if that's a general fund request, and then I would assume authority to spend that. So that's special revenue as you explain that, John. Is that correct?
Well, it is, but it depends on how you decide to do it in the end. You know, in my view, if you're going to put it in House Bill 5, ask for general fund. And if you're going to put it in House Bill 3, you ask for authority. Because I'm okay with putting the whole $100,000 in House Bill 5 and asking for general fund, because I think we already spent $75,000 of our money, or a portion of that. We asked for authority last time to spend $75,000 to $100,000 to proceed, and they created the committee in between and committed us to $75,000, and we spent two-thirds of that, thereabouts. So if I wanted to put in long-range building planning, I'd put it in general fund request, and then you can always drop back. So it's okay with me if it stays there. If that's what the governor wants, I guess that's what he gets. So that's a good question.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll just stop before we go to House Bill 10. On House Bill 3 and House Bill 5, I think it's important to note for board members on the call, you know, if you go back to the minutes of our October 18th meeting, those figures are not going to match what you authorized your staff to do. And I will just point out, with maybe hopefully without having to do too much explanation, is that what you see before you is what we could negotiate and get through OBPP. And so you'll notice that when you total those two together, it's a little less than what you authorized or instructed us to do. And obviously, that was not an instruction for us to make a House Bill 5 request. OBPP decided for us that that would be a House Bill 5 request. So I just wanted to point out those items, maybe as a CYA for myself and the staff with our board members. So
there's still a few people in the legislature that might have something to say about it. House Bill 10.
Okay, House Bill 10 originally was a new proposal, EPP proposal, that went before the board and went before the governor. And because of the $1.3 million, just the sheer size of it and the fact that it's an IT project, that it was decided to move that to House Bill 10, which is state ITSD major projects. So that's why it's in House Bill 10 instead of House Bill 2. It'll get some more oversight and have some more longevity being in House Bill 10 versus House Bill 2 also.
Yeah, the factors, this is Mike, the factors of it being in House Bill 10 means that we will be working with more guidance from the state CIO as we would move forward on those technology upgrades. And it also means that it will be an item that will be in front of legislative finance, if approved in House Bill 10. It'll be in front of legislative finance throughout the coming biennium, which, you know, that's great. Gives us another interim committee to pay attention to and get to attend if that all happens.
So you can see the title there for the project is called Livestock Interface Systems Upgrade in House Bill 10. Basically, that's broken out into two big chunks, which we hope follow, a 2020 and 2021 execution. So the first part of that is a food safety applications to bring our antiquated food safety applications up to speed. And the second big chunk of that is a lab enterprise application so that we have difficulties in the lab, and then we have a hope of having, a smooth system throughout the Department of Livestock that can do some interface back and forth and generate some synergies from that. So,
yeah, and another important note for everyone about the House Bill 10 request is, again, that's another OTO request. It's not an ongoing, it's for this biennium only. We get it done or we don't, and it's not something that will be carrying forward into future bienniums. It's only appropriated for this biennium in fiscal year 2020 and fiscal year 2021.
Questions about House Bill 10? I would raise this. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I thought that was all going to come back to the board as to what the plan was for the IT. I mean, it was
kind of... I was going to raise that very issue.
Okay.
The board members present will remember that there was a motion made that not $1 is to be spent until there is an IT plan approved for the expenditure of those dollars.
Correct.
I felt okay with that when it was within the board's purview. If you have a legislator with House Bill 10, the staff needs to be prepared with something more than what you gave the board for your plan, because I can't imagine a legislator not asking you what's your plan.
Yeah. We are interfacing with the state ITSD program managers to make sure that we're on par with what they're submitting. At the board meeting, we will have a Gantt chart and some other things that we've explored. We've seen some other vendor demos. So we are moving along, but like Mike was saying there, we're not spending a dollar. We're asking for authority.
No, but what I'm telling you is don't get your cart before your horse, because if you go to the legislature, they're going to say, I'm not going to give you authority until you show me your plan in House Bill 10. Or if they grant you authority subject to board approval, that's a whole different ballgame. And so it could be that you have a House Bill 10 hearing before you even have any kind of hearing elsewhere, or before you have anything approved by the board. I'm just cautioning you that if if the House Bill 10 committee is doing their homework, they're going to ask you for what your plan is and before they approve it. And it still has to go back to the board for that. So that red flag. I don't want you to get in there and say, well.
Hello, this is Dr. Pride.
Hello?
Hello?
Who just came on? Would you identify yourself? Hello?
I think they hung up, John, sounds like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, enough said on that.
Yeah, and agree. Agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else on the budget request? Or legislative request? So you'll still have to iron out the diagnostic lab, et cetera. Okay, let's move to, we're right on schedule so far. Let's move to year-end, FY18 year-end. Mike.
Before we go there, can I take a step back? Because
sure.
Something that we didn't get to that I think is worth mentioning, and it's on page 4 of the handout above the House Bill 3. It's back on House Bill 2, so sorry I'm backing up. But I saw this, and I realized when somebody looks at this document later, they're going to have a question. You see a negative number in personal services adjustments for the lab. That is associated with the creation of the Enterprise Fund, which is not part of House Bill 2. So as you remember, last session, the lab has three funding sources.
Okay, hold on just a second.
Well, that's not what it says.
Hold on now.
Am I looking at DSA? That's a DSA adjustment. I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry. I messed up. I may have.
Okay, so let's go to where you wanted to go to.
Yeah, that was the negative number there was the DSA correction. Maybe we didn't show. No, because we had enough. We didn't show a negative. There was but one of the things I want to point out is in the process of accounting for personal services, it doesn't end up being a negative number, but in the process of accounting for personal services, we have had to place some of our personnel costs in the lab against that enterprise fund source, the fee fund source. In the past, we had it all against per capita and general fund. But if you've got fee revenues, you need to also place some of your expense burden with your fee revenue. But it doesn't. I'm sorry, I thought that negative number, but it didn't. And I thought that's what I was looking at. So that's my fault for jumping too fast on that. But that is an important consideration because I know some of our lab staff when they looked through the documents on the governor's website. Pointed that out and said, well, we see some of our salary expenses now against the fees. It wasn't before, but you kind of have to put some of your – you can't –
Okay, so let's stop there a second because
yeah.
You got me now.
Yeah.
So let's stop and start over.
Yeah.
So who said what to created what? What requires you to do what and why?
The snapshot does not capture – we had funding that was being used for proprietary, or that we were funding personnel, 4.75 FTE of personnel out of lab fee revenue. Okay, because that is in Section P of proprietary funds and not in House Bill 2 specifically for general fund or state special revenue, it's been carved away from that. We had to do it. We were getting dinged that $313,000 out of personnel expenses for House Bill 2. And we had to do a transfer of that into, as we were actually paying for it and executing, into the proprietary fund. Those 4.75 people were always being paid out of proprietary fund and will continue to be paid out of proprietary fund.
Maybe just a little clarification.
So let's stop now.
So
the lab is funded by general fund per capita and fees. Okay? We became an enterprise.
Yes.
So state accounting is saying to you that you have to allocate your personal services expenditures to the three revenue sources or at least to the fee source because you're an enterprise. how do you figure out which fees are enterprise? Which personnel costs have to be allocated to enterprise? How do you do that? Well, and the reason I'm asking that question is that before, when we went through this process a different way, right, and we went through the audit a different way, where we said the cost of operating the lab are 40% public health, and therefore fund 40% of the budget with general fund. So now it's flipped on, flipped over.
Ideally, we would take every FTE or every employee, and we would break them out in the same percentages that we have for. So 42% is lab fee rev or expenses, 89% is general fund, or 29% is general fund, and 28% is per capita fee.
Except for some of those personnel are solely dedicated to the public health, like in the milk lab. Example.
I agree. If we had a personnel issue where we had to decide on what, whether we're continuing a service or an operation, then we would have to go back and look and see. So
I'm asking, how did you arrive at how much you're allocating to the fee part?
There are probably 4.75 FTE of personnel with names associated with what's being paid out of proprietary funding, because that's just the way to do personnel line. But that isn't the way we would operationally or managerially think about it. We would think we've got whatever those revenue figures are or expenditure breakouts for the lab. That's the number that we're driving that 4.75 into.
And there's those management questions. I mean,
let me try it again. Though.
Yeah.
Because I think my red flag is that is I'm worried about those who would suggest that, well, now that you are in business, you need to pay all your costs here with your business fees, right? Some people put us in an enterprise fund so we get out of general fund.
Oh, yes.
All right?
Yes.
So I take away your general fund, so now go pay the whole thing on per capita and your fee structure. Can you do it? No. Okay? And so that's why I'm asking, how is it whoever did this figured out which personnel comes out of which bucket? Because in the end, somebody's sorting buckets on us. And I don't want to be left with a great big hole in my bucket.
It's not driven by who, it's just driven by the dollar figures.
Okay, so then how? I'll change that. So how did they do it with the dollars? They took a percentage of the total. So they said out of a dollar of all your revenues, 50% per capita, 30 cents is general fund, and 20% is fees. So now we're going to take your FTEs and divide them the same way. Is that how they did it?
That would probably be the simplest. Yeah, except for the execution of that would be difficult. So in other words, then what we tried to do is match personnel salaries to the level of funding that we have in those different buckets. So we do have, 29% of our employees being paid out of general fund, 28% being paid out of per capita fee, and 42% being paid out of lab fees. It's just a split.
Does that mean that whoever's being paid out of whatever fund can only work in areas that agree with that funding?
We've not done any rigor to get down to the who into the.
And I think this gets to why I pointed it out, although flawed execution on the beginning, is because this is new for this department. We've not had proprietary funding, so what did we do with our budget request? We put it all in House Bill 2, and then it comes back and says, no, that's not the rule. Or we put it in House Bill 2 associated with our normal budgeting process that would be under Section C, would everything else, and said, oh, no, That's not, because we haven't dealt with that before. That's not how proprietary funding is dealt with. And so this is the first time we have anything associated with that section. There's probably other agencies that deal a lot more with proprietary funds and have a lot of experience with how they sort that out. But I think that's the main reason I wanted to point out is because it's new. And I also wanted to point it out because if you just looked where you would have normally seen the lab personnel expenditures, if you go to the website and look at the governor's budget, you would assume when you first looked at it, well, there's a hole here. You lost FTEs in the lab, and you lost funding in the lab. We didn't. It's just part of that funding and part of those FTEs now show up in another section than where they did before.
Yeah, that part doesn't bother me much.
Right, right.
It's the next shoes to drop. It's the next shoes to drop, such as when you're then audited by the legislative auditor who says, put more per capita in, less general fund, and we put more per capita in, and because we had to, and general fund drops, and now we've got special revenue, we've got our fee structure, and we haven't finished the pricing and cost structure yet in the lab, last I heard. So it's possible that you wind up with a hole in there if somebody's assuming, based upon their formulas or whatever they're doing, that so much of it goes from fees and you can't raise that much from fees. And you move from general fund per capita, so you lose general fund, then you got a hole in the funding of the lab.
And I think there's where the rub is in that, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring it out is because I do believe that is a plausible conversation to say, as we look at it, let's drop all of this off the Section C plate and put it all on the proprietary fund and go earn the money and get it. And that's where we will need lots of help. Because what we were left with out of the last session is what's a rather unique hybrid, right?
Yeah.
That I don't know that I see anywhere else in state government. Most things are either proprietary or they're not. They're general fund or they're not. They're state special revenue or they're not.
I agree.
We have this one function within our department that has state special revenue, general fund, and a proprietary fund, all in the same function, and so that does, and that's part of the problem here is now you're starting to get things that are pieced out into different places of the budget document, and it becomes confusing for us to follow, it becomes confusing for legislators to follow, it becomes confusing for our stakeholders to follow. And I think that's the main point. If I was going to say what did I want to get across was this, and I get that, this is something we need to be aware of, and I think the conversation that you brought up is an easy conversation to say, well, you know what, this 29%, whatever it turns out to be, that's general fund, well, this biennium, let's see you try to do that over in Section P. Let's move that over to Section P. Let's move a percentage of FTEs according to that over to Section P. And I do believe in the end game, that's where your defense has to be pretty strong in terms of supporting that, because this is really unusual. If I look down the hall from where we're sitting now in Department of Ag, they have a lot of proprietary funds. I don't know of any of them, and Representative Shaw's here today, and he knows their budget and operations probably well, and others know it as well as we do. But I would say they don't have a hybrid of this type, and maybe there's others out there, but I'm not familiar with them, if there are, that have, you know, three different fund sources, so things are kind of...
Well, that's why I asked the question, and how do they arrive at it?
Yeah.
Because that has consequences.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, I'll just be blunt and say when this goes through the OBPP process, it is not precise. As we all know, all of us who've dealt with it, right? It's not precise.
Okay.
You've got this much to move over, and, okay, that equates to four FTEs, so there you go, right?
Okay, so let's just highlight that.
We wish it, but
for a brief discussion for all the board.
Yeah, for all the board. And I think, John, the point, and I want to reiterate to make sure I'm hearing from
you. Glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I want to hear from you. And what I think you're saying is regardless of whether at the levels above us that it's imprecise, in our management and execution, our preference would be that we will be precise and we'll be able to answer those questions, whether that's what anyone thought of in the beginning or not.
Well, and I'm on the, you know, I've been okay with the notion that we calculated 40% of our activity in the lab as public health.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that being wrong, the wrong method, and I'm okay with it being the wrong result, but we had a method.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm worried about here is if there doesn't appear to be any correlative relationships and we have interested parties who want us to be something other than what we are,
mm-hmm.
and we just have to have some kind of rationale for why we arrived at those numbers.
Yeah, and that's the reason why, and I'm glad you said that. That's why I did not want to blow past it. I also knew that after this meeting, if somebody looked at it and they go, well, wait a minute, where did this activity go? We don't see it, and that was not addressed in our finance committee meeting. I, as we started moving forward, I realized that we had blown past that.
We did. So good. Have we confused everybody well enough now? Are there any questions on the phone? Okay. So
good now
let's go to year end 18.
Well, I looked at the wrong one.
Fire away.
Okay, so this is Brian again. For the members on the phone, the people in the room are just going to basically look for this one and then the next subject of expense projections. They're going to look at the first page of the document. So there's a document in the attachments that you should be looking at that says budgetary expense comparison report for June 30, 2018 at the top.
Got it.
We're basically just going to stick to that one page versus all of the other pages that are similarly colored below it for discussion purposes. Okay, so Mr. Scully asked that we basically try and recap a little bit of what we talked about in our August meeting where we looked at the end-of-year budget, which is basically what we're looking at here again. So I'm just going to go through a little bit here of what Evan briefed then, and if I get some backup from them, that'll be great. In the bottom right corner of this spreadsheet, you're going to see that we ended the year with a positive $341,190 remaining. So there are some probably some financial backflips that occurred with that, but we're going to celebrate that all of the divisions ended in the black. You don't see anybody on that right column that's in the negative. How did that come about? In that, for the most part, that year-end budget changes, the second column on this spreadsheet, so you have FY 2018 budget, then you have year-end budget changes, and you can see down if you stick in the fund area, you can see some shifts of funding that went on there. Everybody tracking with me? Okay,
yep.
So basically from milk and egg, which is also falls into that category of state special revenue, we used authority. And remember, we're talking, this is not cash. We're not taking cash from milk and egg and using it. And you can see the corresponding transfer of authority into per capita fee. But because we do have the cash. We did have the per capita fee revenue to pay for this $339,000, but because of authority issues and mostly tied to, of course, wage increases and that kind of thing, we had to supplement per capita fee to get us in the black in those divisions. Okay, let's see here. I'm sorry. And then also there you can see the $200,000 in lab revenue that supplemented to bring the lab diagnostics into the black there, $20,000. So, and that money was generated, it was out of reserves that we had in lab fees. Okay. The reason that most of that was done is like I said before, that from 2017 we had, you know, wage increases that weren't captured in this biennium, in 2018 by 2018, 2019 biennium to the tune of about $585,000. One of the things that benefited us from this, which isn't necessarily, it's in the FY18 budget, is that we carried forward about $485,000 in previous year money, so 16 and 17 funds were carried forward into 18 to help us out there. I highlight that just because we're going to have a similar issue when we go to 2019 and look at that in the next section, and we need to say, you know, part of the reason why we can get from here to there is carried forward. So,
which is why we're asking for the authority in House Bill 3 for this fiscal year, because we don't have the same amount of carry forward nor the same ability of being able to flexibility to manage the budget.
And I always say, Brian, I'm sorry, and if I'm being too elementary, but just with people who may not follow what we do month to month in board meetings, and you know, for those that do, this document looks very familiar. But for those that don't, I want to make sure that people understand that this document, what does it reflect and what doesn't? It reflects real expense, and it reflects authority, but it does not reflect revenue and cash. Revenue and cash, so this is not a statement of our cash position. We're not saying we have $341,000 in cash on hand. We ended 2018 with $341,190 of budget authority. So I just want to make sure that people, I know the businesses that many people on the call or here in the room today run, and you would look at this and say, well, is that your cash on hand number? No, that is not what that is. We usually reflect that in a different report at the board meetings of what our actual cash position is. This is only in relationship to budget authority. And in the last year of the biennium, we had less authority and we had revenue, if that makes any sense. So that I don't want people thinking we have a cash solvency situation today.
Thank you.
Last question.
Okay, so we ended up transferring $340,000 in authority. Is that what you said? $206,000 out of Shield Egg and so forth and so on. That was authority.
Right.
Plus the authority that was used from 16 and 17.
16 and 17 carry forward authority is in the first column. So that was already added in a prior meeting.
Hold on a second. Carry forward. Define it. Is it authority or cash?
Authority.
Can you get closer to the speaker, please?
The answer to the question was that it is authority on carry forward.
Okay. Oh, that is carry forward authority is already in the first column.
Correct.
So we carried that forward. Plus, we also transferred the other 400 or 340,000 authority.
Per capita fee from the fund sources, yes.
So does that mean we actually had to use 700,000 extra in authority last year?
About 400,000.
Oh, extra.
No.
No, I would say that there's a good strong correlation between that 700,000 and what we did not capture through wage increases that took place.
Right.
So there's a strong correlation. I don't think it accumulates to 700,000, but we were paying for additional wages that we didn't have authority for built into our budget.
In the expense column, you're paying out more money than you're authorized to expend in your budget.
But if we have $480,000,
so therefore you transfer authorization in to help cover the expenses that you already have cash for.
Yeah.
So we had 480,000 forward in authority. And then we transferred another.
So that would equal on an annual basis the amount of money we were shorted by in personnel services from the increase in staff. Around 420 or 30.
Yeah, but the other thing I think may help, Nina, I don't know if it will, but I'll try, is you got to look at some of these as being what I would call, the best term I can come up with, it's probably not good, reciprocal movements, right? So the 200, when you look down at the bottom, the $226,000 of unspent authority that was in Milk and Egg, and you're able to move that to state special revenue per capita fund to offset the increased brands, because I think that's where most of it was, increased brands personnel that came from the snapshot snafu, you're still net zero on authority in that. You overspent in one area, you underspent in the other. All you do is just move the authority from one place to the other so that at the end of the year when you balance the books, you don't have a program with a negative number at the end of it. And another program with a positive number at the end of it to clean up the books. Does that make sense?
What I'm hearing, though, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure you'll correct me, is that you started by transferring $480,000 in authority from 16 and 17. Then you transferred an additional $340,000.
But... We transferred that into per capita, but we took it out of other funding sources, so it's zero in our total authority. So our per capita is higher, yes, but our total authority is not enough. That $107,000, not of the whole $107,000, so it's only enough to that $480,000.
And the 340 number, just to be clear, the 340 number is authority that was left unspent June 30 of 2018, some of which is to be carried forward into this year to help continue fighting through the crops. So the 340 is actually a positive authority number. It's actually authority that we'll be able to use in this fiscal year, not all of it, some of it. And remember, with some of our carry forward and for everyone, with carry forward rules of authority, you can only carry forward authority if some things you're not allowed to carry forward at all, but most you are. And if you carry it forward, you're only allowed to carry it forward 2 years and then it goes away. So some of that carry forward authority was authority we had to use or we would lose it.
We lose it. So we used it. But we don't have the same gross number for this year of the biennium that we had last year, to carry forward authority.
Correct.
Which tightens the budget up.
Yeah.
So the key thing is looking at the budget changes and expenses relative to budget year to year. And the rest of it is the manipulation of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of vacancies and services that were shrunk to get to this number go ahead.
I think the thing that's probably if I'm selfish and say what are two takeaways as the executive officer I would want for stakeholders, the board's been through this 100 million times. But if we think to where part of this meeting goes back to the committee that was helping the board and the department work through some of the challenges it had. For me, the headline is, regardless of the other situation, is that we got through the budget year on our own authority, on our own cash, while at the same time adding to our cash reserves in fiscal year 2018, which I think is a change from what the position was in, say, 2014 or 2015. And I wasn't here, but I'm just going to, as I think about...
Relatively good guess here.
As I think about one of the purposes for this meeting and the engagement with stakeholders is to say corrective actions are having a positive momentum. in the overall financial position for the Department of Livestock.
Okay, well, questions about 18, year-end 18. Current budget status.
So that next, their blue main page that we're going to be on, says Montana Department of Livestock at the top, projected expense to budget comparison report, October 31st, 2018. This is the primary document that we at the board meeting look at on a regular basis. So in this report, you're looking at...
Let me interrupt you.
Go ahead.
For your information, you may look here and say, well, how come not November's? We're not done with November yet.
Yeah.
November probably won't be available for the December board meeting either because it takes 10 to 15 days after beginning of the year. But this, I requested this October 31st because it is available and in front of the board already and gives you a feel for the beginning of the year.
So in the columns, you're going to see year-to-date actual expenses through October 31st. In the first column, and then based on historical data and personnel data, we're gonna make projections from, and it should say actually November to June 2019. In that second column, we total those up in the third column, and then compare it to what we actually had in the budget, and come up with the last column, which is plus or minuses. The other distinction here. And I should have said this on the previous one, too, but this versus what you're seeing in House Bill 2 is you get a little bit more granularity as far as things like salaries, overtime, benefits, you know, personnel services and operations are one more level of clarity. And we use that in our standard budgets for budgeting purposes. And we do have the ability outside of, you know, so in operations, we can move money around pretty easily from contracts to supplies to communications, depending on what circumstances are happening in the year. Really, in gross, looking at this, what we're calling attention to, again, is always that bottom right-hand number. So if we fill all of our positions on schedule as we anticipate and operate to our budget, right now we're projecting a $218,000 hole that we need to fill. We're trying to do that with House Bill 3, and if that doesn't come to fruition, we have another problem.
Well, and we're also, just so you know, you can't, as we talked about at the board meeting on October 18th, success on any measure is not guaranteed, so we are still undertaking management activity to try and improve and put ourselves in a better position. I'll give a clear example of that. You know, we have vacancies. Now, some of them we would like to fill those vacancies, but the silver lining in the cloud is that we haven't been able to find appropriate personnel, and that's why you see this. Board members who've been looking this month after month, you'll see the October is an improvement from the September in terms of what that bottom right-hand number is, and that's due mainly to those vacancy savings that you know, in the projections that Brian and Evan have put together, they're assuming we will fill that position in December going forward. But if we didn't fill that position in December, we'll catch up a little bit more. But I do believe, and carry forward's been factored in this. And so this is a true representation of saying, this is why we need House Bill 3, very strongly why we need House Bill 3, because even at our best management activity, you know, there may not be enough authority for this fiscal year. The problem that we've talked about again and again with the salary decisions that were made 2 years ago, as we pointed out when we discussed House Bill 2, the snapshot has corrected that for future bieniums, but we still have to close our books at zero or better on June 30 of this year, and that's what we need assistance with. Did I state that correctly, Mr. Scully?
You did.
Mr. Chairman.
Understand that?
John?
Yes.
This is Lila. I'm going to drop off the call. I have another meeting, so thank you for all your work on this.
Thanks, Lila.
I'll listen to it. Yeah, bye.
Any other questions about the budget year to date? And you understand the House Bill 3 gig, right? Okay. Okay.
So, John, this is Jay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Just
one more question. So, what happens in the event House Bill 3, we don't get that money? I know that, Mike, you said you've kind of already are taking kind of management actions. Do you feel like you can still do that enough if House Bill 3 doesn't occur, or that money in House Bill 3 doesn't occur, or authority, or money, I guess?
But let me try to answer that rather than put him on the spot.
I was going to give you a non-answer.
The likelihood is that we would not be able to make the end of the year. And the other issue is if there is additional expansion in DSA activity, that will increase those issues, and those are ones you can't project any further than what we already have. And so I think it's very important for us to get the second year. We worked hard to manage the first year and made it. We have less carry forward and less tools available to us, to the staff, to do it. They will do what they can, but I don't want to be in the position we've been in the past. And as a matter of fact, we did everything we said we were going to do, and the legislators authorized us to do it, and the industry approved the increase in per capita. We're just asking authority to spend that money they increased.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure the staff will do what they can to make it, but without it, it's going to be awfully difficult. Why
well,
do I say that? Look at last year. Look at last year and how we ended, and subtract $400,000 from it, and you'll see why.
Well, I appreciate just being blunt, and so thank you for doing that. So then it just gives us a better opportunity as we go and we hit the legislative session to advocate on this behalf. So I do appreciate that.
Yeah, we're not trying to sandbag anything or anybody. We made it through the first year, but it's not very likely.
And Jay, I'll add to what Mr. Scully said in that the reason I even mentioned that, yes, are we undertaking management activities? Because we have to, one, because as I said, success is not guaranteed. But my brief experience with the legislature last time is that if they see you working your tail off to correct your problem, they usually are in a much more helpful mood than if you are saying, we're sitting here waiting for you to bail us out. So I want to have some things that if asked directly, I can say, we are doing everything we can within our power to reduce that number and fighting as hard at that as we can. So it's honest that, you know, we're not waiting for someone to bail us out. We are trying to help ourselves, but we're at a point where we feel like we may need a little more help than what we can get done ourselves.
And remember, this is authority.
Yeah.
To spend what the industry agreed to pay for the service. And we have to keep that in mind as well. Okay, now
thank
there's
you.
One other thing that I that in the year-end data and legislative requests, the only thing that is not listed here that will have to be requested is the appropriate salary increase for the chief executive officer, and that's the authority. And that's a request I made to the legislature and will make again. That's not Mike's burden, that's the board's. And so he's an independent contractor. He doesn't get automatic increases, and we're not asking or didn't ask last time and wouldn't ask again for something that's outside the ordinary. But the normal course of others, we would ask for authority incrementally to anything that's on the legislative request. And so far, that's the only thing we have. Okay. Next one. Anything else on current budget status? year-end or legislative requests. Don't be afraid to double back if you got something. Okay, a vendor egg diagnostic lab. Building status.
Okay. Do you want us or do you want to speak?
Go ahead.
Well, I'll just say, and I know, Mr. Scully, so I don't know if you're going to recap any of the committee that's been established, or the board's established a committee. They had a meeting. I'll just say from a staff perspective, our major activities has been to work with OVPP to get the budget request in to be able to move the prospectus, for the lack of a better term, that came out of the lab study committee ahead to the next step of actual architectural design and maybe a finer point on the construction cost and those types of factors that while I think are pretty good in the work that was done by the folks contracted by the legislature, you know, we still need to put a few more finer points on that. And we have been requested by the board and will be doing some assessment of current operations, backup plans, you know, for loss of critical systems, emergencies, things of that nature, because until the day a new lab is built, we do know we have to make the facility we have work. And I don't think it's a strange thought to anyone who's sitting on this call today that there are risks there that we need to assess and have plans for based on the facility we're in. So that's what I would say from a staff perspective on current VDL status, that things we've been directed by the board to undertake. And if I miss something, let me know.
No, and we'll have a committee report at the next board meeting that will go along the lines of where Mike is at. We have we welcome any member of the agricultural community to sit in on the vendor aid diagnostic lab meetings. We have created a committee that has three staff members, which are Mike and Brian and Dr. Z. We have three board members with Nina, Lila, and myself, and Sue.
No, Sue, I'm not on.
Oh, that's right. Nina's not. I'm sorry. Sorry, Sue, if you're still on. But Nina came to the last meeting, so we'll probably have those on going forward basis. One representative from the Veterinarians Association, Stuart Doggett, and his alternate, and then two voting members from the agricultural and industry community. And so, rather than having, you know, we'll have plenty of flexibility for anybody who wants to join the group, but that's the way we're going to operate it until it changes. And we'll do a report coming up. The grand total of the dollars identified are around $34 million, give or take, and by the interim committee. They have a report to give to the Legislative Finance Committee at 4:15 on December 3rd. Our board meeting will be December 5th. I plan on attending the December 3rd board meeting for that committee's presentation. I have been in contact with the Senate and House, a couple of the members of that committee. We had the staff person from that committee come to the Florida Livestock Committee, did an excellent job of reviewing documents. There are documents available. If anybody would like a copy of those, they'll be in black and white and not the colored ones that we had, although we will be getting a few more colored ones from the staff from the committee sometime in the next few weeks. I know it's going to be on the agenda at Stock Growers. John Youngberg missed that meeting because of his meeting ongoing, so we're more than happy to come to a subcommittee or executive committee or do anything necessary. But John himself sat in on the legislative hearing, so he knew what took place there, even though his convention was ongoing. I screwed up and thought his convention was the following week, but it wasn't. So we went on with it in any event. Any questions about that? Again, it's going to be one of those situations where there's no money. It's not the money that's the problem, it's just the money. We still have obligations to meet with the Montana State University and the Board of Regents because that's the real estate upon which the lab now sits, and they are the current landlord. And so there will be work that will have to be done with the university going forward, hand in glove. And they're busy with their session without a doubt, so it won't take place anytime quickly. Anything else on that one?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just say that I sat in on the meeting in Bozeman, and the university, and I've heard from people, I wasn't at that portion of it, that the university said they weren't interested. But there's, you know, the truth is the people that presented have voted against everything the university has wanted. There's politics involved in that. And then they stood up and said there's no money. They're not going to allow you to bond. They're not going to allow you to put that in long-range planning. And you can't do a private-public partnership because they limit you to a 7-year contract. Not many people are going to build a $34 million lab on a 7-year contract. So there's a lot of things that have to change before I think the board's in a position to move ahead.
So I think, and if we could reiterate your conversation at our board meeting, we'll try to do that whether you're there or not. It's the fifth.
You'll have to do that.
You're gone, right?
I'm in Laramie.
You're in Laramie, as I thought. So you can get it. Any other comments from the industry or others on the? Sue, are you still on?
Yes, I'm.
Any comments you'd like to make about that or any of it?
No, I'd like to try and set up a meeting with MSU as soon as we can. I think that's an important thing, even if it's 2-3 months down the road, just to have that set up.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely on the agenda after the board meeting on the 5th.
Great. Okay, that's my only comment.
That's something happens in the 5th that I'm not aware of.
What? Does anyone off the top of their head and things they've read know what the start date for the new Vice President of Agriculture is?
She'll be here the 14th. I talked to her not too long ago, 14th of December, but I don't know when her official start date.
Yeah, because I would say it would probably be more productive to have that individual at whatever meeting we put together. Maybe not, but...
Well, I think, I think so, too. Lila and some of the industry people have a good relationship with the president, and I think we'll let them figure out in conversations with the president maybe what she wants.
Who the president wants.
She wants.
Yeah, who the president wants.
She may want to have it first by herself and then later. I don't know. But we'll see. But the point is we'll meet with her. Anything
John?
Else?
John?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Stuart. With the Montana Veterinary Medical Association. I just want to let you know that I appreciate being part of the committee. And as we discussed last time, we've had some outreach from a new fellowship with Senator Daines' office prior to that meeting. And they expressed real interest in working on veterinary medical issues. And of course, the senator being from Bozeman, we then reached out to them after last meeting, Charlotte and I did, and basically invited that staff person to attend the December 3rd meeting, basically to call in and listen. They expressed a real interest in it, and then also to attend and listen to a portion of the December 5th meeting of the Board of Livestock. So we tried to create a spark of interest there with the senator's office because they had reached out to us previously on veterinarian issues. So we're kind of pursuing that a little bit and just kind of wanted to make you aware of that. Don't know where it'll go, make no guarantees, but I don't think it hurts at all.
No, it sure doesn't. That's very helpful. Thank you, Stuart. Any other comments? Ed, did you have any comments? Okay, other legislative issues. Is there anything we need to bring up?
Yeah, just for the benefit of the stakeholders, I'll be very quick with this, just to mention that there are 8 bill drafts that we've been working on. I think the hay is in the barn on those now. We're waiting for
pre-introduction letters to come back so we can go out and find sponsors. Where I'm at in that process is I've had to submit a list of potential sponsors for legislation to the governor's office for vetting. And, you know, I'm mostly pulled from the House Ag and Senate Ag committees because that's where those bills will start and the committee members that are there. And just so you know, look for people that I thought would be okay with the governor's office and people who've been friendly to the department in the past. So I'm waiting for the governor's office to give me a green light on potential sponsors and to get the pre-introduction letters. My deadline on that legislation will be December 15th. I have to have a legislature agree to sponsor, sign off on it, and turn it in with legislative services to maintain our priority. The eight issues are largely, as I said, cleanup of language. They were approved by the board, I think, going all the way back to last spring. If you wanted to look back through board meetings, there are two issues in meat and poultry inspection, one with some language around home-killed and homegrown meats that FSIS pointed out in their review that were not compliant with federal law and that they wish to see us strike that language from state code. So we're trying to comply with that. Also, in the process of the board working with the meat industry on an appeals process, the appeals process that we have in statute is a problem with FSIS. So that was another piece they wanted stricken. We've got a new rule on appeals that takes place that, but we need to strike the statutory language. There's two issues regarding aerial hunting. One, making sure that the aerial hunting fees can go to the area of the department that's actually doing the work to attempt to offset some of that administrative cost. Currently, aerial hunting fees go to another account that's given to another partner and are not helping offset the work being done. We're also trying to change the language on out-of-state restrictions for aerial hunting. So since this isn't a sport game hunt, our objective with this program is to control coyotes and foxes for the benefit of reducing depredation on livestock. So we don't want to discourage anyone in-state or out-of-state from wanting to come here and engage in that activity. So that's the reason for that change. Our brand's dealer fee license is in statute at $50. So we'll have a legislative proposal to remove that $50 fee from statute and be able to set that fee in rule. Because obviously if it's in statute, it never changes, regardless of what changes in our operations. Another bill draft we have is targeted at moving the required dates for people to request a refund on per capita fee to be in line with the actual reporting time of per capita fee. To get those things in structural alignment. In import regulations, it's more complicated in the way I'm going to say it, but we're striking repealing a section dealing with import of semen, biologics into the state of Montana and moving, updating that language to current practices within the industry and moving that to our other import statute so that import of anything, those import requirements are in the same statute and same section. So whether it's live animals, semen, biologics, whatever it might be. And I'm trying to say I think I've covered them all at that point. And I have covered all of those. And as I said, they're pretty much basic cleanup items, but those will be bills that will be coming from the Department of Livestock for the upcoming session.
Could you shoot those LCs out?
Yeah. And we'll do that not just for John, but all the issue advocacy folks we have on the line. We'll make sure they all have copies of those bill drafts.
Questions concerning any of those legislative items? I'm sure Representative Shaw isn't here. He had to go to the Capitol, but we're fairly confident there will be something in the offer dealing with milk.
Yes.
Maybe two or three different things dealing with milk. There may be other things that we're not aware of, but is there anything else that you wanted to just put an antenna up that we've heard but don't know? They aren't department bills or anything.
Right.
Issues dealing with milk or variety.
I haven't gone in a couple of weeks. Actually, I haven't gone in since the election, and I need to update my watch list, which for those that don't know, I know that those that are lobbying at the State House know that. But for late, there's a good way to go in and tag things to get email updates and know when bill drafts come out, know when hearings are coming up on certain issues. So I keep a watch list. I will say that there's probably – even before the election, there was close to 100 bill drafts that just or placeholders that just based on the title. And I'll tell you, my marker is if it mentions livestock, if it mentions taxation, and if it mentions wildlife, those are things I pay a lot of attention to. So there's a lot of things out there, generally revised livestock laws. You know, sometimes that's people just putting in placeholders to be ready for their constituents to come forward with something. Sometimes that means that legislature has some issues that they're wanting to bring to bear. And until you see bill drafts come out, you really don't know what all those motivations are. There's a lot of bill drafts concerning bison, particularly targeted, I think, towards domestic bison in the central northeastern part of the state. You know, I fully expect, as it happened last time, that it would not surprise me to see a bill dealing with Yellowstone bison again, like came forward last session and was heard in the Ag Committee. You know, those are some issues I'm paying, from myself, paying very close attention to. But I've not heard of any real strong motivations on the milk issue since John raised it. I believe people within the industry, both Montana Milk Producers Association and the Sanitarians, are working together on a raw milk bill palatable to the interests of the Department of Livestock and the Department of Health and Human Services as a counterweight against other bills that most certainly will come. And I know some work is being done directly on that, and some meetings have been called on that. Which I made Representative Shaw as chair of the Ag Committee aware of this morning in an earlier conversation. And so I do know that, as John pointed out, there's definitely bills coming from multiple angles in regard to that issue.
Could you identify the chair of the Senate and House Ag Committees and then also our Appropriations Subcommittee?
Mm-hmm. The chair of the House Ag Committee will be Representative Ray Shaw. The chair of Senate Ag and what else they put in with Ag in the Senate, I can't remember, but it's Ag and something else, Ag and Water or something. Senator Hoeven will again be the chair of that. He was chair of that last session. On our Section C Appropriations Subcommittee is going to be chaired by Representative Ken Holmland out of Miles City, Senator Dwayne Ankeny, Representative Jim Keene, Senator Jeff Wellborn, Senator-elect Janet Ellis. She's just moving over from the House to the Senate. I can't remember if he's a senator or representative. I believe he's a freshman. Joe Reed, does that name ring a bell?
Yeah,
he's a
freshman representative from Polson.
Okay, freshman representative from Polson, and that is the Section C subcommittee.
Okay, any other questions or issues? I know a couple of you have joined us since we started the call. Is there any public comment on non-agenda items? Okay, hearing none. Board members, any other issues that you want to bring up in the committee meeting? If not, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? In that case, I'll take the prerogative of the chair and adjourn the meeting. Thank you all from the industry for participating in this session. And if there's anything we can follow up on, don't hesitate to let us know.
Thank you.
Yeah, because it's all over. Yeah, public defense.